evening. I'm Michelle Greenstein, filling in for Rick Sanchez. Let's get started. We are witnessing the emergence of 5G, the fifth generation of wireless technology. 5G is currently being rolled out in cities across the country. In fact, here's a map of all the cities with either 5G coverage currently or plans for 5G coverage later on, either from AT&T, Sprint, T-Mobile, or Verizon. 5G is the groundwork for the wireless industry, what they're calling the Internet of Things, a system in which everything from your car to your dishwasher to your door lock to your baby's diapers will be connected to the Internet. If something can be connected, it will be connected in a 5G world. But don't take it from me. Take it from the man who used to head the Federal Communications Commission, the agency which is supposed to be in charge of regulating the wireless industry.
If something can be connected, it will be connected in a 5G world. Autonomous vehicles, smart city energy grids, transportation networks, and water systems. Hundreds of billions of microchips. The 5G revolution will touch all corners of our country.
But this 5G revolution may have a dark side. As it turns out, wireless radiation has biological effects. Published, peer-reviewed science already shows that today's technology creates radio frequencies that pose a threat to both the human body and to animals, not to mention to the environment. These existing health effects of wireless radiation are worthy of attention because in order for 5G to work efficiently, cell towers will need to be installed everywhere. That's why over 200 doctors and scientists worldwide are now cautioning that we need research on the health effects of 5G before its rollout. In a moment, you'll be hearing from one of those doctors, with more on the ramifications this new generation of wireless tech may have on your health. But first, let's consider that the brain tumors, infertility, memory loss, nausea, neurological disorders, and anxiety may not even be the worst 5G has to offer. Because with 5G also comes the potential to turn every device into a way for the state to spy on you. Again, don't take it from me. Take it from Mr. James Clapper, former director of National Intelligence, who said that in the future, intelligence services might use the Internet of Things for identification, surveillance, monitoring, location tracking, and targeting for recruitment. Take it from David Petraeus, former director of the CIA, who said, "Transformational is an overused word, but I do believe it properly applies to these technologies, particularly to their effect on clandestine tradecraft. These technologies could lead to rapid integration of data from closed societies and provide near continuous persistent monitoring of virtually anywhere we choose." So why is the federal government allowing for the rollout of 5G and even encouraging it? Well, maybe one of the reasons is that 5G offers security agencies unprecedented access to the data on our lives, to not only the information we choose to share online, but the information we don't. It's the news with Rick Sanchez. Let's do news again. Here are the questions we think you'll be asking tomorrow. Will we be protected from the potential dangers of 5G? What's behind the U.S. military buildup in Africa? And how many black holes are in our galaxy? Let's get started. Not only is the government failing to take into consideration the health effects of 5G before rolling it out, it's actually passing laws to fast-track this rollout. These laws make it the right of way in front of homes. It makes them available sites for 5G transmitters without the consent of property owners. Here to explain why this may be so dangerous is Dr. Martin Paul, Professor Emeritus of Biochemistry and Basic Medical Sciences at Washington State University, and the author of 5G, Great Risk for EU, the US, and International Health, compelling evidence for 8 distinct types of great harm caused by electromagnetic field exposures and the mechanism that causes them. Before we get into how 5G, this new generation of wireless technology, which will drastically increase our exposure, is a threat to the human body, what evidence do we have that the electromagnetic fields that we already are exposed to are harmful, given our current levels of exposure?
Well, we have about 10,000 papers that have been published and many, many hundreds of reviews that have been published that clearly show that there are massive effects on our bodies based on the exposures we already have.
So what exactly is going to be changing when 5G rolls out? Is it a simple case of more exposure, or is it a different type of frequency?
It's not so much the frequency, although that's important. It's the pulsations that are the critical thing. 5G is designed to carry gigantic amounts of information, as you've already stated. And the way that information is carried is by pulsations. We know that the pulsations make these electromagnetic fields much, much more dangerous. And 5G, therefore, is designed to be vastly more dangerous than anything that we've been exposed to date.
In some of your work, I've seen evidence of effects on fertility in both male and female bodies. I've seen neuropsychiatric effects and cellular DNA damage, which of course can lead to cancer. We've also got apoptosis. Can you explain how we've come to these conclusions? I mean, is this just one study? Is this multiple studies? How can we back up these claims?
Oh, there are many, many, many studies on each of these, and there are quite a number of review articles that have been published on each of those effects. There are also other effects that occur that are life-threatening as well. So, we have, for example, cardiac effects that produce that are life-threatening, and so there's huge amounts of information on each of these things. And so there should be no question that they're going on, and they're going on based on exposures of the sorts that we already have. Exposures from cell phone tower radiation, from cell phone radiation, from cordless phone radiation, from Wi-Fi, from smart meters, et cetera. All these things produce effects.
Now, to play devil's advocate, one can say that, hey, if you don't want to be exposed, don't buy a cell phone. Don't buy a wireless router. What would you say to those people?
Well, I would say you shouldn't do it. That's true. I don't have a cell phone. I don't have Wi-Fi in my house. I do everything wired to the extent that it possibly can be. So it's perfectly possible to do almost everything that you want to do in a wired configuration, which are much, much safer than the way we're doing things by and large. So yeah, I agree with your point. Yeah.
Right, and to a certain extent, with the rollout of 5G, you may not even be able to escape yourself from this exposure risks if we're having small cell towers being installed all around the country. Now, what can you tell us about the way entities like the FDA or the National Cancer Institute have been handling this information?
Well, the problem is that in the U.S., the funding, government funding for doing research in this area was cut off between 1986 and 1999. And since that time, the only thing the government has been doing is to push these technologies out, and there's absolutely no effort to determine what kinds of health effects are being created. Fortunately, there's a lot of very good evidence from studies that are going on elsewhere. But the U.S., and we take great pride in our science, and as an American scientist, I really hate to say this, but American science basically is nowhere in this area because there is simply no funding.
Hmm. Something that stood out to me is the possibility of oxidative stress. In your paper, 5G, Great Risk for EU, the U.S., and International Health, you know that there are multiple studies linking the exposure of electromagnetic frequencies with oxidative stress. Can you explain to us why we should care about a term like oxidative stress? What kind of ramifications does this have on our health?
Well, oxidative stress and free radical damage, which is associated with it, have important roles in causing essentially every chronic disease that we suffer from. So these are very, very important in terms of human disease mechanisms.
In your opinion, why is it that we see so little coverage about the risks of this rollout, which is already occurring in this country in the mainstream corporate media?
I think it's probably because there's so much industry money that's going into advertising that so much of the media has simply been, in effect, been corrupted by the industry money. And it's really tragic because, you know, as I say, there are literally thousands of studies that show that there are major impacts on human health. There are hundreds of review articles that show there are major impacts on human health based on the exposures we already have. And we have every reason to think that 5G will be much more dangerous because of the pulsations and because of the incredible large numbers of antennae that will be all over the place, making it almost impossible to avoid these exposures.
Dr. Martin Paul, thank you for being with me. This is both fascinating and a bit scary, I have to say.
Yeah.
The State Department has signaled that the United States' so-called efforts against ISIS are expanding. On Thursday, State Department Counterterrorism Coordinator Nathan Sales explained that the U.S. will be working with its allies to combat ISIS-linked groups in Africa.
In Africa, ISIS-linked groups are on the rise. ISIS branches and networks now span the African continent from east to west and north to south. They've increased the lethality of their attacks, they've expanded into new areas, and they've repeatedly targeted U.S. interests.
Professor Gerald Horn is a historian and the author of White Supremacy Confronted, U.S. Imperialism and Anti-Communism versus the Liberation of Southern Africa, as well as the book Blows Against the Empire, U.S. Imperialism in Crisis. He joins me now. When the Trump administration was speaking of justifying the new military budget, which is about $1 trillion in military spending, we have unprecedented levels of military spending, they seem to be going along the lines of China, China, China. Are these two narratives contradictory, or is there a bigger picture at play?
It's both. I mean, first of all, the United States creates problems and then tries to inject military force in order to supposedly solve the problem. I mean, for example, if you look at this religious zealotry, you see its roots in Syria and the failed attempt to overthrow the Assad regime. Mm-hmm. You see it in Libya in terms of the successful effort to overthrow Gaddafi, which has led to an explosion of religious zealotry. And you see it in Iraq in the aftermath of the overthrow of Saddam Hussein in 2003-2004. And yet, now we're told that the United States has to pour money into Africa in order to solve a problem that it helped to create. I found it quite striking that when Speaker Nancy Pelosi made her recent trip to Africa, she stopped through AFRICOM headquarters in Italy to begin with. This was very suspicious, in my opinion. But in any case, I think that the overriding issue, as your question suggests, is the fact that there is a new Cold War erupting with China. And Africa, as during the first Cold War, will be a major battlefield. Until quite recently, the United States was the major trading partner of the African continent. It has been replaced by China. You also see that in countries like Ethiopia, China has played a major role in terms of building a railway, ditto for Kenya in terms of building a railway from Nairobi to the Indian Ocean port that is Mombasa. The United States, during the George H.W. Bush administration, announced quite significantly that it had more will than wallet. That still remains the case, and the United States can only compete seemingly with China if it tries to compete on a military plane, which of course would plunge Africa into more disastrous conflicts, which it seems to me is the not so hidden agenda behind this emphasis on ISIS and so-called religious zealotry.
So overall, could we say that the United States' approach to the continent of Africa has been more military-heavy than economic?
Absolutely. I mean, first of all, let's go back to basics. My presence in North America is a direct result of U.S.-Africa policy. I'm a descendant of enslaved Africans. The United States was built by free African labor. Until quite recently, as noted, Africa was a major trading partner of the United States, as the book that you mentioned so kindly in my introduction suggests, the book on Southern Africa that I just wrote. The United States was a major partner of apartheid South Africa. Not only a major partner of apartheid South Africa until it was ousted from power, at least political power, in 1994, but also a major power of Portuguese colonialism in Angola, a major oil producer, a major partner of Portuguese colonialism in Mozambique on the southeast coast of Africa, and of course a major prop to the white minority regime that formerly existed in Rhodesia, now Zimbabwe, until the 1980s. So Washington does not come to the table with clean hands, to put it mildly, when it comes to Africa policy.
Right. I mean, you could say that the U.S. has a history of perhaps unfair trading practices, to put it, you know, very mildly, or screwing the countries with which it does business. China doesn't have that history, at least not yet. So is this why we're seeing African nations choosing to trade with China and do business with China instead of with the U.S.? Is it that simple, that we really have this history of exploitation that China doesn't have?
That's part of it. I mean, keep in mind as well that in the 1970s, the Chinese government helped to build a railway from landlocked Zambia to the Indian Ocean port of Dar es Salaam in Tanzania, so that Zambia could export its copper and thereby escape the stranglehold of apartheid South Africa and racist Rhodesia. Today, China has built the Museum of Black Civilization in Senegal, a major tourist attraction. It's built a major library, again, in Tanzania. And China does not have this problem that the United States has in terms of this problem with the African slave trade, the problem of relationship with apartheid South Africa, et cetera.
So, I mean, it makes sense if you think about it. These countries are choosing to trade with China instead of the U.S. So the U.S. is almost de facto forced to come at this from a military perspective. That's the only advantage we have. We don't have that economic one, but we, of course, do have the military one. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And once again, with regard to this new Cold War, you might have seen the news just early this morning where China has devalued its currency, which brought an angry, furious tweet from the 45th U.S. president. This will allow China to compensate for the tariffs that Mr. Trump has imposed because its exports will be cheaper. In fact, China might come out the winner with regard to this devaluation versus tariff imposition by Washington. The stock market had its most significant drop today in 2019, that is to say 950 points. And so we're on the cusp of a major battle royale between the People's Republic of China and the United States of America. And I'm not sure if the smart money is going to be betting on Washington.
That's right. I mean, you could say that we are witnessing the rise of China, at least economically. Do you think we're witnessing, in addition to that, the decline of the U.S. empire?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I just finished a manuscript on the 1500s. And one of the reasons why we're sitting here speaking English is that the major power of that time, the Ottoman Turks, cut a deal with London against the interests of Spain. And they did not foresee that this would lead to the rise of England as a superpower, then passing the baton onto its revolting spawn known as the United States of America. In the 1970s, you saw that China cut a deal with Washington against the interests of the then Soviet Union. In return, it got massive direct foreign investment. In return, it also waged war on Vietnam, which was quite satisfying to the hawks in Washington. Those who made that deal, including Secretary of State Henry Kissinger and President Richard Nixon, could not envision, or did not envision, that this would create this seemingly unstoppable juggernaut, now known as the People's Republic of China, which will have enormous consequences for the global correlation of forces, not to mention the fate and destiny of white supremacy, which has been in the saddle for much too long.
Do you think it's about time that the U.S. had a player that can maybe counter U.S. hegemony? Is that the role China's playing?
Well, that's the role China is being forced to play, and not only with regard to Africa, but also with regard to Latin America. It's a major trading partner of Cuba. Keep in mind that China has major interests in the Bahamas, just off the southern tip of Florida. It's built a major highway in Jamaica, linking the north and south side of the island. It has major interests in Venezuela. One of the reasons why the Maduro regime in Caracas has been able to hold on is because of the assistance it has received from the People's Republic of China. Once again, if you look at Iran, one of the reasons why Iran has been able to escape the suffocating sanctions imposed by the United States, it's because it's been able to send its oil steadily and continually to the People's Republic of China.
That's right.
So you go around the globe and you see that China is now thwarting the agenda of Washington, which is leading to conniptions in Washington.
Gerald Horn, thank you so much for being with me.
Thank you for inviting me.
I think in general, the people in my industry, the news industry, we need to have more historians like you on our segments. Thanks a lot. It turns out black holes may be closer to Earth than we previously thought. Here's RT's Trinity Chavez with that story.
Don't let the name fool you, because black holes are anything but empty. In fact, experts believe that there are millions of black holes hiding in our galaxy. Now, a pair of Japanese scientists have announced a plan to hunt down these so-called lost black holes. Scientists believe that millions of black holes are slowly draining the Milky Way of dust and gas. But this isn't the first time experts have drawn this conclusion. In 2018, NASA-funded research found that there could have been between 10,000 and 20,000 black holes gathered around the huge black hole in the center of the galaxy. And in February this year, this research found that there are potentially 100 million quiet black holes in the Milky Way. But tracking them isn't always easy. According to reports, the gravitational forces around the black holes are so intense, not even light can escape. And since they can't be detected using traditional methods, all the known ones have companions or have been caught eating up material that led to emitting light, which can be observed. However, researchers out of Tokyo and Kyoto University claim that they have found a way to detect these isolated black holes through their X-ray emissions. According to their research, since all black holes feed on the matter of interstellar space, this produces an accretion disks of the matter that surrounds the black holes, which for the biggest black holes produces X-rays that can be detected by scientists. Meanwhile, astronomers say that there could be at least 100 million black holes hiding in the Milky Way. This is based on the estimate of our galaxy having had roughly 20,000 stellar explosions in the past million years and having been around for about 13 billion years. Currently, the closest known stellar black hole is about 3,000 light years away from Earth, and it's between 9 and 13 times the mass of the Sun. And while the researchers hope to discover more in the coming years, their research still has to be assessed by other scientists. Reporting in New York, Trinity Chavez, RT.
This weekend, our country saw two mass shootings less than 24 hours apart. On Saturday in El Paso, Texas, a gunman opened fire inside a Walmart. At least 22 people were killed. In Dayton, Ohio, another mass shooting left 9 dead and close to 30 others wounded. Here's U.S. President Donald Trump announcing that he wants new hate crime legislation in response to these events.
Today, I'm also directing the Department of Justice to propose legislation ensuring that those who commit hate crimes and mass murders face the death penalty, and that this capital punishment be delivered quickly, decisively, and without years of needless delay. These are just a few of the areas of cooperation that we can pursue. I am open and ready to listen and discuss all ideas that will actually work and make a very big difference.
With more on this, here's RT's Ashley Banks.
Two cities are grieving after two mass shootings within 24 hours left at least 30 people dead and more than 50 others injured.
The first shooting unfolded in El Paso, Texas on Saturday. That's where 21-year-old Patrick Cruces from Dallas drove nearly 10 hours to a Walmart in El Paso. And around 10 a.m., he opened fire on back-to-school shoppers, killing 20 and injuring more than two dozen. Witnesses say he was armed with an assault rifle and wearing protective gear when he unloaded his weapon. Shortly after the shooting, the governor of Texas addressed residents.
Texas grieves for the people of El Paso today. On a day that would have been a normal day for someone to leisurely go shopping, turned into one of the most deadly days in the history of Texas. Lives were taken who should still be with us today. 20 innocent people from El Paso have lost their lives, and more than two dozen more are injured.
At least 20 minutes prior to the shooting, authorities say Cruces posted a message on 8chan, an online message board used by the far right, saying there's been a Hispanic invasion of Texas. He also expressed support for the gunman who killed 51 people in Christchurch, New Zealand, earlier this year.
Police arrested Cruces on the scene. He was then charged with capital murder, which means he could face the death penalty if found guilty. According to officials, since his arrest, he has been working with investigators and has told them he acted alone. At this time, the shooting is considered to be the eighth deadliest shooting in modern U.S. history. In less than 24 hours, without warning, Dayton, Ohio became the next victim of a deadly mass shooting, this time in a nightlife district. Around 1 a.m. Sunday morning, 24-year-old Connor Betts opened fire at crowds gathered outside of nightclubs, killing 9 people and injuring 27 others using a high-capacity rifle. The entire ordeal took less than 30 seconds. One of the deceased is the shooter's sister, and among the injured was a friend of the shooter who police say had no involvement in the shooting. At the time of the attack, officers were in the area. They acted quickly, fatally wounding Betts as he was just steps away from entering a crowded bar. At this time, police are investigating to determine a motive behind the shooting. The mayor of Dayton has been deeply saddened by the tragedy that struck the city, but is amazed by the police response, saying it could have been worse.
The officers were there less than a minute from the beginning of the shooting. The shooter was able to kill 9 people and injure 26 in less than a minute. And if we did not have police in the Oregon District and the thousands of people in the Oregon District enjoying their Saturday evening, what we could have had in the city. So it is a terrible day for Dayton, but I am so grateful for Dayton Police's fast action.
President Donald Trump has linked the shootings to mental illness. He stated more has to be done to prevent these shootings from taking place. He added, hate has no place in our country, and we are going to take care of it. This has been going on for years and years in our country, and we have to get it stopped. However, many critics argue it's Trump who's the one that's fueling this anger and discord in this country, adding if it weren't for his rhetoric regarding immigration and the border, at least one of these shootings wouldn't have taken place. Reporting in Washington, Ashley Banks, RT.
That's our news. Thanks for being with us. If you know anyone looking for a newscast like ours, tell them about us. We'll see you right here tomorrow when it will be again time to do news again.